Happy Tuesday, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC, and we are fresh off of the best Apex card of the entire year. I'll call it right now. This was probably the best UFC Apex card we've had all year. So many finishes. I think it was 8 of our 11 fights we had finishes. Despite having no fight of the night, I was pleasantly entertained the entire evening. We're going to be recapping and reviewing and even talking about what is next for all the fighters after UFC Vegas 100. Wow, it sounds weird even saying 100. It's weird we've gotten to this point, and it's a shame that we're not over. We're still going to be going to the Apex in 2025, but the rest of the year, we will be getting crowd events, which I'm very excited for UFC 309 this upcoming Saturday as I record this on the 11th of November, the 16th. There will be a huge pay-per-view, Jon Jones versus Stipe Miocic. That episode of our predictions will be coming later this week. On today's episode, we'll also be looking at week 10 of the NFL. We have the best fantasy football performance of the entire season so far, and my Minnesota Vikings won. A lot to talk about week number 10. Of course, new UFC news, pop culture, and we will be looking at the final election results for the 2024 United States election. I'm very thankful for the winner, and I will try and do a unbiased review, but I promise, actually, I'm not going to do an unbiased review. I don't care. I'll let my opinions fly around the world. Let's get right on into everything. First off, as always, new UFC news. And we've had a couple new fights being announced, very thankfully. The first one, Miles Johns, of course, supposed to be in the co-main event against Cody Garbrandt, unfortunately pulled out. Okay, Cody Garbrandt pulled out, so Miles Johns has a new opponent at featherweight. He takes on the fellow bantamweight, who I actually think is a flyweight, Felipe Lima. What in the world? Miles Johns, 15-2, scheduled for a co-main against Cody Garbrandt, will instead be taking on Felipe Lima at UFC Tampa December 14th. Felipe Lima, 13-1, defeated Muhammad Nemov in his debut. So he is actually not the Felipe Lima I was thinking of. So I'll be actually very curious to see how this one goes. Lima got submission in his debut. Impressive stuff. I'm excited for this one. They both have very similar chest tattoos. We'll see if that offers any benefits for them in their matchup. Obviously not. I'm being sarcastic. Speaking of UFC Apexes, UFC Vegas 101 has another new fight January 11th, a welterweight matchup between Santiago Ponzinibbio and Carlston Harris, both veterans of the men's welterweight division. Santiago Ponzinibbio, 11-7 in the UFC, 29-8 professionally. This guy holds wins over Alex Morono, Neil Magny, and even Sean Strickland. As of late, Santiago, not the best of luck, losing left, losing right. He just hasn't been able to get a win. Similar situation for Carlston Harris. Carlston Harris, 19-6. He's gone 4-2 in the UFC. Before joining the UFC, he actually held a win over Michelle Pereira. That is right, the entertaining middleweight. Also wins over Impa Consagnon, Jeremiah Wells. He's a decent fighter. I probably lean Carlston Harris in this one, actually, as Santiago Ponzinibbio has just not looked himself. As of late, I am excited for that matchup. Another one on that same card, Nurullo Aliyev takes on Yanal Ashmaz in the lightweight division. Nurullo Aliyev from Tajikistan, 9-0. All right, won his UFC debut against Rafael Alves. He looked very impressive. He might even be the only fighter from Tajikistan when he won, and this was just on a regular Apex card. Freaking Tajikistan had a huge watch party on a giant like power projector, looked like a freaking movie screen or whatever, and they were going nuts. So Nurullo Aliyev has an entire nation backing him, and Yanal Ashmov, you know, he hails from Israel. Not a lot of Israeli fighters in the UFC. He holds wins over Sam Parison and Trevor Peak in the UFC. He's currently 2-1. I'll be interested to see that one as well. Another matchup for you. This one, UFC 312, going down February 8th in Sydney, Australia. Light heavyweight matchup as Jimmy the Brute Crute is back in action. 12-4 record, 4-4 in the UFC. This dude has just had just the worst luck ever, you know. He has had to fight, I'm trying to think, he's had to fight Jamal Hill. He has had to fight Anthony Smith, Alonzo Menafield. I mean, this dude has been through the ringer. Looking to get back in the win column as he takes on Marcin Prochino. Marcin Prochino actually holds a win over Khalil Rountree Jr., funny enough. 4-6 in the UFC, so not the best record. 17-8 overall, though, much better. He hails from Poland, but you know what? Jimmy Crute, I got to back him in this one. Looking to get him back in the win column. I thought he would have beaten Anthony Smith had he not injured his foot. It's unfortunate he was then fed to Jamal Hill, who has insane knockout power. UFC 312 has another matchup, this one at flyweight, between the undefeated 10-0 Japanese fighter Rei Tatsura. Rei Tatsura won his UFC debut over Carlos Hernandez. I love this guy. Reminds me of an even younger... Tatsuro Taira is young. This guy reminds me of an even younger Tatsuro Taira. Japanese MMA coming to take over the UFC. He takes on the Australian Stuart Nicole. Stuart lost his UFC debut this year, but hey, 8-1 overall. Decent fighter. He'll be coming into this one as the hometown boy, as this card is in Sydney, Australia. I gotta back Rei Tatsura, though. Okay, Rei Tatsura, his striking looked good. The grappling looked really good. Stuart, I don't know too much about you, but I don't think it's going to be enough. Final one for you that was announced today. Another one for the UFC 312 card. Quinlan Salkiel, I'm sorry if I'm butchering that, an Australian fighter, 25 years old. He'll be making his UFC debut against Anshul Jubilee, one of the only, if the only, Indian fighter in the UFC. He's gone 0-1. You know, he lost his UFC debut in terrible fashion as he was up two rounds and gassed in the third and got TKO'd. But Ashnell, he's an entertaining fighter. He fought on Dana White's Contender Series. No, he fought on the Road to the UFC, which is like their international matchup. And hey, Quinlan, 7-1. You know, he's another hometown Australian. I love that they are getting local talent. Truly, I love when they get the local talent. It really gets me fired up because you get to see new fighters. And who doesn't love seeing new fighters? But that's all the new UFC fights that we've had officially announced. As for other news, you know, you've had Colby Covington calling out Shavkat Rakhmonov and Jack Della Maddalena. I don't know if Colby's ever going to fight again. I mean, I would love to see Colby versus Shavkat Rakhmonov at UFC 310, as apparently they're still trying to keep Shavkat on that card. But really, I think they're going to go with Kamaru Usman. I think they're going to throw enough money at Usman, enough incentive to give him a title fight. And honestly, let's look at the last people Kamaru Usman has lost to. Looking at how he was able to handle Khamzat versus Robert Whittaker, huge telltale of his abilities. And other than that, two losses to Leon Edwards. The second one, you know, it was unfortunate. Got knocked out in the final round in a fight he was winning. The rematch, riddled with fouls. You know, I think he lost that 48-46. But I don't know. So I hope Shavkat fights on that card, but Ian Gary's booked. Jack's either fighting Colby Covington or no one. Sean Brady fought too recently. I don't know what's going to happen to 310, but I'll be interested to see a lot of new UFC news always coming and going. And I'll tell you what new news is always coming and going. That sounds dirty, but we're talking about discussing film, the top 10 new things in pop culture. We've had some fun announcements over the last few days. So as we all know, we look at discussing film, we pick out top 10 new things that we find intriguing, and we bring them to you right here, right now, every single episode. Let's get right on into it. First off, Robert Eggers says they brought over 5,000 well-trained real rats to the Nosferatu set. I didn't know that rats are incontinent, so the smell is insane. Incontinent. I don't even know what that means. That's disgusting, but yes, this new film called Nosferatu, I don't know if it's a horror, I don't know if it's a thriller, I don't know, a suspense film. I don't know what it is, but the fact that they brought in that many rats, oh my gosh, I hate rats. Truly, I hate rats. And one of my friend's girlfriends said, oh, I used to have a pet rat, and I had to act like I thought it was cool, but really, I thought that was freaking disgusting. I am not a rat person, you know, I apologize, but man, I just don't get 5,000, insane, absolutely insane. No for me, I'll tell you that. I am all good. Number two, James Gunn indicates that the first Superman trailer is now ready. It's on my hard drive. He said, James Gunn, I wonder what else is on your hard drive. Just kidding. I'd like to hope James Gunn is a good man. You never know in Hollywood. Superman, you know, the newest Superman. I hope it's different. I hope it gets that James Gunn twist that he always brings to his films. But I mean, how many Supermans are we gonna get? Is this our new main Superman, whoever this guy is that's gonna play Superman? I don't know. I'll have to see the trailer to give a full judgment, but hey, according to James Gunn, it'll be coming soon. Number three, Warner Bros. Is selling 10 fully functional but not street legal Tumblr Batmobiles from Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight films, each is priced at $3 million. I don't even know what that applies to me. Okay, I don't have $3 million to spend on a Batmobile. I wish one day I will. One day I'll have enough money to buy myself a Batmobile, and I'm going to drive it all over the streets. All right, it's going to be absolutely insane. I'm pumped for it. Number four, Dwayne Johnson says he took on the Smashing Machine for A24 to challenge himself in ways that he could never imagine. He now wants to continue doing movies like this where the material is deeper. It allows me to sink my teeth into something deeper and richer. You know, I actually like this. I definitely like this because, you know, a lot of movies with The Rock now, it's just The Rock is a fighter. The Rock is a superhero. The Rock is a military man. You know, it's never really the character, but with the film he's portraying, I feel like you're actually going to see the character more than you're going to see Dwayne Johnson, The Rock. So I'll be interested to see whenever this trailer comes out. I might see this, I might not, but the transformation from the photos we've seen has looked ridiculous. Hwang Dong-hyuk says money is what convinced him to make Squid Game Season 2. He said, even though the first series was such a huge global success, honestly, I didn't make much. So doing the second series will help compensate me for the success of the first one. I'm glad for that because Squid Game Season 1 was ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. I mean, that was such a good show. Every episode ending, you're like, I have to see the next one. I'll be excited to watch the second series, whenever season, whenever it comes out. I'm here for it. Number six, bum, bum, bum. There's been a lot of stuff with the Batman. I know that's been wrapping up. First look at John Cena's return as Peacemaker in Peacemaker Season 2. I was a huge fan of Peacemaker Season 1, big John Cena fan in the first place, and I think Season 2 is going to be just as good, if not even better. I trust what James Gunn is doing with Peacemaker, and hopefully he can transfer John Cena over to whatever you want to call it, the main DCEU, whatever universe they have. I'm here for it. Number seven, Kevin Feige names his three favorite MCU moments. Number one, Tony Stark saying, I am Iron Man. Number two, Black Panther being revealed for the first time. And number three, the portal sequence with the Avengers. Honestly, I'm going to be honest, I rock with these. I actually rock with these. Tony Stark saying, I am Iron Man, probably one of the most pivotal moments in the MCU. Kicked it all off, let the world know they're superheroes. Black Panther being revealed, I mean, hey. He was technically the first black superhero, and that did a lot for a lot of kids in this generation. Plus, Chadwick Boseman was an amazing actor. I mean, holy cow, when he got revealed, I was like, who is this guy? This guy's a badass. I've never seen him before. And then the portal sequence in Avengers Endgame, I mean, will anything top that? I was going ballistic in my seat. I mean, I get in the movies, you know, watching those, and I always see like, oh, you're stuck in the Matrix for watching all these movies. How about when I'm experiencing something that draws out emotions, I'm going to stick with that. So those are some fire moments. What am I ever going to say? Number eight, major animated sequels releasing in 2026, Shrek 5, Ice Age 6, Toy Story 5, and the Super Mario Bros. Movie 2. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. We really just can't come up with any new movies. But I'll be honest, they have been and they all suck. So Shrek 5, I'ma see that. Ice Age 6, I don't know. You know, I think every Ice Age movie, I don't want to say it's gotten progressively worse because I think Ice Age 1 is super deep. Ice Age 2 has some interesting themes. Ice Age 3 might be my favorite. I also like Ice Age 4. I think it's when it got to Ice Age 5, it got way too goofy for me. It just got ridiculous. But hey, they're bringing back another Ice Age 6, the original cast. I'm here for it. Trek 5. I mean, we've been waiting a decade for that. Truly, we've been waiting a decade for that. Toy Story 5, I could do it out. Honestly, Super Mario Bros., that movie surprised me. I actually like that movie. Nothing has been as good as Puss in Boots, though. Puss in Boots, The Last Wish. Amazing. Utterly amazing. Number nine. What can we go with here? I thought there was some other fun stuff. I know they've been releasing trailers for the new Captain America movie, the Thunderbolts movie, a lot of MCU stuff going on right now. And here we are, the final 10. First look at the new tribe in Avatar, Fire and Water. They are nomadic and travel through the air. It is very trippy. I don't know what I'm seeing. It looks very weird, but I'm ready to be transported back to Pandora. Okay, watching those films just does something to me. It's like I'm watching reality. It's like I'm on an alien planet, but yet I have to remember it's all fake. None of it's real. It's really trippy. And James Cameron described the Ash people in Avatar Fire and Ash as a reflection of the worst side of the Na'vi people. He says we have a lot of anger and a lot of rage in the world we live in right now, and he's going to bring that to life with these people who just want to burn everything to the ground. I'm honestly here for it. It gives me the chills. It gives me the heebie-jeebies, and I always love when people get political, not really. I'm also being sarcastic. I hate when people try and get political. I mean, oh my gosh, we don't need to correlate movies to the real world, all right? I don't need those themes, okay? I don't need those themes. But speaking of the political spectrum, by the way, that was your final one, the last 10 things in pop culture. Speaking of the political world, I mean, if no one was aware, we had a huge election, and I don't know if you want to call it an upset or something, but Donald Trump, stood on business. Donald Trump stood on business and utterly dominated the election, winning 312 to 226 in the Electoral College. Overall total votes, it's not fully in, but he's just around 75 million. Kamala's around 71.5 million. So Trump pulling away in both categories. He won, oh my gosh, do I have a state total here? Let's see. Kamala won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. She won 18 of the 50 states. Donald Trump won 32. I think she won 19, so I think 31 actually. But Trump was just on a roll. You know, he won Wisconsin. He won Pennsylvania, Michigan, Florida, North Carolina, Tennessee, South Carolina, Georgia. I mean, it was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. Of course, Minnesota goes to Kamala. I mean, come on. We're such a Democratic state. But when you look at it, you know, she only won by just over 120,000, okay, which was just not how it's supposed to be. For California, she won by under 3 million. For the Biden election, he won by 7 million. Okay, so we've been seeing a huge swing in a lot of these states. Illinois, it was previously a 2 million lead by Biden when he beat Trump. Kamala only won it by 400,000. So what you're seeing is a red wave. You're truly seeing a red wave. You're seeing people change their minds and kind of go, okay, Democrats are screwing me over. Democrats are absolutely screwing me over, and I'm sick of it. I'm completely sick of it. I know for Minnesota, I mean, out of the entire state, only, I think it is, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 of our, like, 100 counties or something, or 50 counties, voted for Kamala Harris. I mean, the majority of the state went for Trump. Unfortunately, when you look at every single state in the United States, every big city, it's all going Democrat, which is just suspicious to me. I mean, even in Florida, Miami, West Palm Beach, Orlando, Tallahassee, those are all going to Kamala. We go to Texas. Texas is, I think, arguably considered the most red state. It was actually Oklahoma. Every county in Oklahoma voted for Donald Trump. But I mean, El Paso, Dallas, Austin, Houston, it's just ran by these Democrats, and they just continue to get all these votes. It's absolutely insane. One thing I do want to keep in mind, though, is I don't want to divide. I don't want to be left versus right, Democrat versus Republican. I want to unite us all, but just for this short time, because over the last 4 years, all I've had to hear is how much the Republicans suck, how much Trump sucks, how much my views suck, and now it's finally good to get a win. It's finally good to get a win here, and I'm going to relish in it. Let's see, Alaska. What happened in Alaska? Trump got 141,000 votes. Kamala got 103,000. That's just goofy to me that there's under a million voting in any state. I mean, what about Montana? What, actually, where is Montana? Montana, where is Montana? Or Wyoming. Wyoming is what I was thinking of. Wyoming, how many people voted? I'm always curious to see this. 192,000. Oh, that's actually a lot more than I thought. One reason I think that Trump did win this election, though, is due to the fact on how he went about his campaign. You know, he ran a much better campaign than Kamala. He went on podcasts. He went on shows. He got out there. Whenever they made fun of him for something, he would go on and use it like the garbage truck, for example. And, like, I think his people were called, like, so I think it was Biden or Kamala called, like, Republican voters trash so that he showed up at a garbage truck. People made fun of him for his diet. He went and worked at McDonald's. Such an absolute troll. Ran one of the best campaigns I've ever seen. And it was honestly impressive. It was really impressive. I'll tell you what else is surprising. Jill Stein, who works with the Green Party, which all I could describe as Green Party is a weed. They want to legalize weed. I don't even know what the Green Party stands for. She got 712,000 votes. Robert Kennedy, who said, don't vote for me, vote for Trump, got 686,000. Chase Oliver, who ran in the Libertarian Party, 613,472. And other candidates who could legit be any other human being, 360,000. I just find that kind of crazy, if you ask me, that anyone can technically run for president. You can technically write in anyone for president. It's just kind of known that we choose two candidates. And I get people say, like, oh, I hate both candidates. Well, I feel like you can vote for some others if you really want to. I don't really know. But I was happy with the results. It's insane if you look at the map right now. I mean, it's literally the West Coast and the Upper East Coast, the Northeast Coast. I mean, you got Washington, Oregon, California, Colorado and New Mexico, and we'll even throw Hawaii in there, and including Alaska, everything from like the Minnesota line down to Louisiana, technically if you follow the Mississippi River, everything's red except for those six states. It's absolutely insane. I mean, Nevada, Utah, Arizona, Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, both Dakotas, Nebraska, Kansas. I mean, all of it went to Trump. We go east of the Mississippi, Minnesota, Illinois. You pretty much got Virginia, like I said, Maryland, Delaware, New Jersey, that whole area. That's all blue. Iowa, Montana, Arkansas, Mississippi, Louisiana, Michigan, Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, West Virginia. It's all going to Trump. It's insane to see. It's insane to see that it wasn't even close. And it reminds me of the Hillary Clinton one. Everyone was saying, hey, Hillary Clinton's going to win. Hillary Clinton is going to run away with this. And Trump just had to show him who's boss. Trump had to show him who's boss. And a lot of women keep saying, all my rights are going to be taken away. Your rights are not going to be taken away. Okay, I'm happy to speak to you about that. I'm happy to understand. But I'm also a very understandable individual. Okay, I honestly sympathize with people. And I get some people maybe worried. But you have to understand, like, nothing's going to happen. You know, as a Republican man, you could say, I consider myself more conservative than Republican. You know, I'm American before conservative, even man of God before even American, if you want to say that. I'll just let you know that everyone kept saying, like, oh, Mo, they're going to come take away guns away. Oh, they're going to ban this. They're going to ban that. They never actually do all that. It rarely happens. This is land of the free, home of the brave. And I'll sign you all off with a political talk with a happy Veterans Day to everyone who has served out there. Let's get into some fun stuff, ladies and gentlemen. And that is week 10 of the NFL season. And we did decent on picks. Not good enough. Not to my liking. I expected better of myself, sadly. I'll say that for starters. But let's get into our picks. Talk about the top fantasy performances. There was a lot of fun stuff. So, kicking us off, Thursday Night Football, 35-34, we had a burner. We had a barn burner. Ravens and Bengals. Ravens win by 1 point when the Bengals elected to go for two instead of tying the game, and they failed. In this game, your top three fantasy performances for each team, the Bengals, the best fantasy performance of the season, 55.4 fantasy points for Ja'Marr Chase. On the NFL fantasy app, he had 60. Insane. Joe Burrow, 36.72. Chase Brown, 22.4. Insane effort from the Bengals. Ravens, Lamar had 33.9. Wallace, is it Trayvon? Trevon Wallace, 20.5. Mark Andrews, 18.8. And, wow, just absolutely insane performance here. Joe Burrow, 428 yards, 4 touchdowns. Chase Brown, 42 rushing yards and a touchdown, but he had 9 catches for 52 yards. The standout player, Ja'Marr Chase, 11 catches, 264 yards, 3 touchdowns. And I hate to say it, he's the best wide receiver in the league right now. Insane performance, utterly insane. They didn't even have T. Higgins. Ja'Marr Chase was eating. For Baltimore, Lamar Jackson, 290 yards, 4 touchdowns. Derrick Henry, 68 rushing yards and a touchdown. Mark Andrews, 6 catches, 68 yards and a touchdown. Wallace, 3 catches, 115 yards and a touchdown. Zay Flowers, only 4 catches, 34 yards. Rashad Bateman also caught a touchdown. Are you freaking kidding me? Nelson Agholor had 1 catch for a touchdown. Why weren't we passing to Zay Flowers? Oh, man, screwing me over in fantasy. Let's see how I do in fantasy this week. I might win in one league. I lost in one league unless Puka Nacua gets 50 fantasy points, which after watching Ja'Marr, perfectly can happen, can easily happen. I'm probably going to win in one league, lost in one. As long as I win in one league every week, I'm always happy. Checking out the AFC standings, Ravens 7-3. They're currently number two. I'm in AFC North. They're currently second in the AFC North. 318 points. You know, they've crossed the 300-point threshold. They've also improved to 4-1 at home. 2-game win streak. Impressive. Bengals fall to 4-6. Still going to try and get into the wild card. It's looking more and more bleak. They have a +8 point differential. They've gone 1-4 at home, though. That's just not going to get it done. Unfortunate for the Bengals. Great game for the Ravens. Heading into Sunday, we had a little international game in Germany as the Giants took on the Panthers. And I cannot believe how bad the Giants are as the Panthers win 20-17. Insane. Top fantasy performers. Tracy Jr. from the Giants, rookie, 16.4. Daniel Jones, 12.2. Malik Nabers, 10.8. No one was doing anything. Chuba Hubbard for the Panthers, 25.9. Bryce Young, 12.04. The Kiki Eddie Pinero, 10 points. Oh, my goodness. I mean, just insurmountable. You know, the Giants just couldn't do anything. The Giants offense was halted, just halted. They had no answer for anything. 190 yards, 2 picks, rough game from Jones. Tracy Jr., 103 yards and a touchdown, the only one doing anything. Malik Nabers, 6 catches, 50 yards. Just was not enough. Carolina, Bryce Young, 126 yards and a touchdown. He plays conservative, but gets it done. Chuba Hubbard, 153 yards, one touchdown, four catches, 16 yards. Was doing all that he could. Other than that, no one really did anything. Javion Sanders, the tight end, caught a touchdown. That's about all that happened. Panthers squeak away 20-17. Fumble, I think, on like one of the final plays where they could set up a game-tying field goal. Giants are now on a five-game losing streak. This was considered, I think, a home game for them. They're 0-5 at home. 2-8, they are one of the worst teams in the league. They're the worst team in the NFC, and I believe, actually, they have the most, them and the Jaguars are tied for worst team. Oh my gosh, if we're going off of stats, I don't think they're actually the worst, but 2-8, abysmal season for the Giants. They are just, oh, just gross. As for the Panthers, 3-7, they have the same record as the Saints, okay? One of the worst offenses, though, 167 points for, 310 points against. This is rough, but hey, two-game win streak now for the Panthers. You're doing better than you did last season. You got to take the wins where you can get them. We'll give it to you, Panthers. Did not see that coming, though. Chiefs and Broncos is one of our noon o'clock games that got us going. And oh, son of a gun, the Chiefs do it again. I just can't. I cannot believe it. The Chiefs improve to 9-0. They're the best team in the league. They've only given up 161 points on the year. I can't believe it. I truly can't believe it. Chiefs win 16-14. Wow. Just wow. Cortland Sutton for the Broncos, 19 fantasy points. Bo Nix, 16.1. Derek Valet, 13.9. Wide receiver. Travis Kelce for the Chiefs, 20.4. Kareem Hunt, 17. Patrick Mahomes, 16.5. Rather slow game. We had a touchdown from the Broncos in the second quarter, two touchdowns for them, and those will be their only scores for the game. Other than that, we got Travis Kelce touchdown in the second quarter, Harrison Butker field goal, 14-10 heading into halftime. Butker would hit a field goal in the third and a field goal in the fourth, and with a game-winning field goal set up, perfectly makeable, the Chiefs block it. Insane. The Chiefs escape another week. They've escaped every single week. I can't believe it. All I gotta do is give them props, man. 9-0 defending champs. They're the Golden State Warriors, okay? They're the New England Patriots. I don't know what you want to call them. They just keep on winning. Bo Nix, 215 yards and two touchdowns. Also had -5 yards rushing. That's funny. But yeah, Bo Nix, decent game. Nothing done in the running department. Estime, 14 rushes, 53 yards. No idea who that is. Cortland Sutton, 6 catches, 70 yards and a touchdown. Vele, 39 yards and a touchdown. Decent stuff. Patrick Mahomes, 266 yards and a touchdown. Average. Kareem Hunt, 35 yards. He was really doing it in the passing game. 7 catches, 65 yards. Kelce, 8 catches, 64 yards and a touchdown. Oddly, DeAndre Hopkins, 4 catches, 56 yards. Not too bad. Chiefs remain as the best team in the league. It's truly insurmountable what they're doing. It's incredible. Broncos, 5-5, sadly on a two-game losing streak. Tough losses, though. Ravens and Chiefs are two of the best teams in the NFL. You know, you still have a +20 point differential. 2-2 at home, 3-3 on the road. Broncos just have to hold it together. Okay, they're in the mix for that wild card. You know, we're picking seven teams. Seven teams go to the playoffs, all right? AFC East, the Bills are running away with it. AFC West, Chiefs are running away with it. You got the Chargers, though. Chargers are in the mix for that 5, 6, and 7, all right? Steelers, Ravens, they're battling. One of those two teams is for sure taking the 5, okay? So we're looking at the 6 and 7. Texans are probably going to sneak in, even though the AFC South completely sucks. So really, it's going to come down to Bengals, Broncos, maybe the Colts, okay? So I would not rule out the Broncos' playoff chances, but it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. Best of luck to them coming in the coming weeks. Steelers and Commanders was an absolutely amazing game. But this Steelers team, man, they're special. I pick them every single week, and they knock off the red-hot Commanders. 28-27, George Pickens, 20 fantasy points. Russell Wilson, 18. Najee, 11. Austin Eckler for the Commanders, 18. Scary Terry McLaurin, 16.3. And Zane Gonzalez, the kicker, 11. Look, this was an absolutely close matchup. It was 27-21 heading into the fourth, and with 2 minutes left, Mike Williams, the newest pickup, catches a 32-yard touchdown to take the lead, 28-27, and the Steelers D comes up huge, halting them from going anywhere. Incredible game. They went back and forth. This was truly an amazing football game. Russell Wilson, 195 yards, 3 touchdowns and a pick. It's unfair. It's unfair, Justin Fields and Russell Wilson, crazy combo. Najee Harris, 53 yards, 1 touchdown, decent. Jaylen Warren, 14 rushes for 66 yards. George Pickens, 5 catches, 91 yards and a touchdown. Pat Freiermuth, 3 catches for a touchdown. Mike Williams, his lone catch was a touchdown. That's pretty crazy. Jaden Daniels facing a stout defense, only 202 yards passing. It was Austin Eckler's 44 yards and 2 touchdowns who got it done. Scary Terry, 5 catches, 113 yards. Really the only benefit of this Commanders team. It's tough. It's tough going. Steelers 7-2, I believe, are the third best team in the NFL statistically. Best team in the AFC North by far. They have one less loss than the Ravens. 4-game win streak. They've been incredible. 4-1 on the road, too. That's very impressive. As for their counterparts, the Commanders, second now in the NFC East, 7-3. Kind of the opposite situation of the Ravens and the... Who was I just talking about? Steelers is the Eagles and the Commanders. Eagles, 7-2. Commanders, 7-3. You know, Commanders are just one loss behind, but... Eagles are red hot right now. They keep getting big wins. I think the Commanders and Eagles will battle for the winner of the NFC East. The loser will definitely fall into that fifth spot for the playoffs whenever they come around. Speaking of the NFC, the Vikings beat the Jaguars 12-7 in probably the worst game of the week. I can't lie. It was brutal to watch. And Brian Thomas Jr. just wouldn't... Let's talk about it. Let's talk about this for just a second. 12-7. TJ Hawkinson, 15 fantasy points. Minnesota D, 15. Our kicker we picked up, 13. Evan Ingram, 10. Jacksonville D, 7. Travis Etienne, 5.3. There was nothing to be loved fantasy-wise here. Let me take this through you. Mac Jones got a touchdown in the first quarter. We kicked a field goal. 7-3. We kick a field goal in the third. We kick 2 field goals in the fourth. That's the game. That's the entire game. It was so brutal. We set the record for most time of possession this season, for most plays ran in someone else's 50 on someone else's part of the field, and we just only put up 3-4 field goals. Abysmal. Sam Darnold, 241 yards, 3 picks. Insane. Aaron Jones, 17 rushes, 88 yards. He got hurt. Cam Akers, 13 rushes, 38 yards. Sam Darnold, 7 rushes, 28 yards. Ty Chandler, 4 rushes, 18 yards. We were letting anyone run it at this point. Hockenson, 8 catches, 72 yards. Jefferson, 5 catches, 48 yards. It just looked like high school football. It was abysmal. Mac Jones stepping in for Trevor Lawrence. Hates blacks. All right. He would not pass to my sweet Brian Thomas Jr. He hates black rookies. Mac Jones is racist. Let's bench him. Put Trevor Lawrence back in. That's a real white boy right there. Insane. Utterly insane. I mean, come on. 111 yards, 2 picks. Ugh, just terrible. Etienne, 44 yards rushing. Bigsby had 2 rushes and got hurt. Evan Ingram, the only good player on this team. 6 catches, 40 yards. All right. Brian Thomas Jr., 2 catches, 12 yards. He had like 4 targets. That's it. Insane. That's why Jaguars are one of, if not the worst teams in the NFL. One of the worst teams in the NFL. Vikings, though, 7-2. We're second in the NFC North. 2-game win streak now. Not too shabby. We have a plus 64 point differential. I'll take that. Big game with the Titans next weekend. Very winnable for us. But after this performance against the Jags, I don't even know anymore. Jaguars, 2-8. 202 points put up, 264 given up, 0-5 on the road, 3-game losing streak. Yeah, Jaguars might be the worst team in the NFL. Then they suck. They suck. You know, when Trevor Lawrence is in, I think they're actually decent. But when Mac Jones is in, ugh, we're starting to remember why he got cut from the Patriots or traded away, whatever. Falcons and Saints gave us a tough matchup in the NFC. What am I thinking of? NFC North. That's what it is. NFC South. Dang it. I'm picturing the United States differently. Falcons win 20. Or no, Saints won 20-17. I completely forgot about that. Bijan, 30 fantasy points, went off. Drake London, 17. Darnell Mooney, 14. Marquez Valdez-Scantling. From the Saints, picked up this week, 25.9. Derek Carr, 20.46. Alvin Kamara, 15.9. This was a crazy game. It was 20-17 heading into the final quarter, and Young Hoku missed 3 of his 4 field goal attempts, including a game winner. The Saints went off defensively. Okay, this was the Saints' week to win. They had the home team. They had the momentum. And honestly, it was a feel-good win. Yo, I picked the Falcons to win, but hey, I can't lie. They were all cheering. They were all going crazy. And I was kind of like, okay, I kind of feel good for the Saints here. I got to give them that. Kirk Cousins, 306 yards and a pick. No one would get a touchdown. They were just getting opportunities. Bijan, 116 yards and 2 touchdowns. The best player out there. London, 8 catches, 97 yards. Mooney, 5 catches, 96 yards. Pitts, McLeod, Bijan, they all caught some passes. Derek Carr, 269 yards and two touchdowns. This looked like the Derek Carr we all know and love. Valdez-Scantling, three catches, 109 yards, two touchdowns. He lit up the field. And by the way, he had all these points before halftime. He either got 25 points before halftime and said, all right, I'm going to sit out. Kamara, 55 yards rushing, five catches, 54 yards. He was all right. Taysom Hill would have loved if he could have done a bit more, but big win here for the Saints, kind of messing up the Falcons' chances of an easy sweep of the NFC South. Luckily, the Buccaneers are completely falling apart. Saints are 3-7. Now they're not the worst team in the league, you know, and they don't even have a bad point differential. They snapped this crazy 6-game, 7-game losing streak, and there you go. Good win for the Saints. Falcons, man, 6-4. It's tough out here. It's really tough. You know, these teams, we forget, are professional athletes, okay? And as bad as the Saints have been, they're still the top and the best of the world, okay? So, Saints, good win. Falcons, I'm sure they'll bounce back. 49ers, Buccaneers, like we were just talking about, this NFC South team. Buccaneers, 23-20, lose again. Four straight for the Bucs. 4-6, they're second in the NFC South. And oddly enough, the Saints and the Panthers are only one game behind them. That doesn't even make sense to me, but Buccaneers, man, that's actually a tough loss. That's really a tough loss. 49ers, a must win. 5-4 now, 2-game win streak. 49ers trying to secure maybe even the NFC West, but definitely a playoff spot. Brock Purdy, 23.82. Ricky Purcell, 17.3. Christian McCaffrey, back in action. 16.7 fantasy points. Good stuff from Christian McCaffrey. Rashad White, 19 fantasy points after I fucking trade him. I'm sorry for my language if there's any children or my parents or my grandparents listening to this. But I come on. I can never get fantasy football right. You gotta be kidding me. I trade away Rashad White for Tank Bigsby. Tank starts doing terrible. Rashad starts doing good. Story of my life. Bucky Irving, 17 fantasy points. Baker Mayfield, only 8.94. Not that good. Jake Moody, 44-yard field goal after being injured last week to win the game. Brock Purdy, 353 yards and two touchdowns, and people call this guy overrated. I'm talking to you, Tyler Bryschke. Insane. McCaffrey, 39 yards on the ground, 68 through the air on six catches. He was getting back to his prime ways. Juwan Jennings, seven catches, 93 yards. Of course, George Kittle, three catches, 57 yards and a touchdown. And Ricky Purcell, four catches, 73 yards and a touchdown, including a big 46-yarder in the first quarter. Love me a little, Ricky Purcell. Yet another close game for both of these teams. 49ers will look to improve in the coming weeks. I mean, Buccaneers, Baker, 116 yards and a touchdown. Just not going to cut it. Rashad White and Bucky Irving, they've been looking great. Baker, kind of deprogressing. Can't even lie. Baker Mayfield has been low-key deprogressing. If I could actually look at the current QB rankings, I wonder if he took a dip in the overall standings for score. You know, every week we track the scoring. I think I've given up on the word sheet. I think I'm just going to do it on, what do you want to call it? Just looking through the app. But yeah, Baker Mayfield, now the number three fantasy QB. Joe Burrow has passed him. Any other changes? Not really any. Geno Smith on a bye dropped out of the top 10. But yeah, Buccaneers, tough losses. Thought they were going to be good in the early part of the season. They've just been playing tough teams. They have a tough schedule, similar to the Bears. It ain't easy out here. No, it ain't. Bills and Colts was the next matchup we had on the docket. And Bills, 30-20. It wasn't easy. Colts gave them a bit of a run for money at times. But at the end of the day, they just weren't going to lose. The Bills just weren't going to lose to this Colts team. Bills, top of the AFC East, 8-2. Okay, 8-2. They're the third best team in the league, second best team in the AFC West. 4-0 at home, 5-game win streak. Yeah, they have a plus 97 point differential. This Bills team is good. James Cook, 15 fantasy points. Buffalo D, 17. Josh Allen, 18. Incredible. Alec Pierce for the Colts, 18.1. Jonathan Taylor, 15.2. Josh Downs, 14.2. Just ain't enough. Colts, 3-game losing streak, 4-6, second in the AFC South. Tail this game. I mean, you got a garbage time touchdown from Alec Pierce to make it 30-20, but it was 30-13 the majority of the way. It was insane. You know, Taron Johnson picked off Joe Flacco right off the rip. Then it was 10-3 after a couple field goals. Then actually, you know, shockingly, 10 more points, and out of nowhere, it is 13-10. Colts are winning. Then Josh Allen touchdown, Tyler Bass field goal, James Cook touchdown, and it was just ran away with. Josh Allen, 280 yards and two picks. Got down on the ground, though, 50 yards and a touchdown. James Cook, 80 yards on the ground and a touchdown. Matt Collins, four catches, 86 yards, was the wide receiver leader for the day. Dalton Kincaid, two catches, 24 yards, got started in the first and then got hurt. It's a shame. All my players get hurt. I hate it. Joe Flacco, 270 yards, 2 touchdowns, 3 picks. Very rough. Jonathan Taylor, 21 rushes for 114 yards. That's all he does. Man, tough stuff for the Colts. There's nothing more to say. Nothing more to say. This Colts team, you know, I think they need to move on. They need to move on from Joe Flacco. Put Anthony Richardson back in. Come on, give him a shot. All right, we're not just going to give up on him just yet. He's not even bad. You know, they just play some tough opponents here and there. Give him the benefit of the doubt. Come on. Patriots, Bears up next. And, you know, I knew the Bills would win. I knew the 49ers would win. I knew the Chiefs would win. Are you freaking kidding me, Bears? Are you kidding me? I'm done picking the Bears. I'm honestly done. I can't pick them anymore. Patriots win 19-3. Not even close. Not even close. The number 6 defense in the league, the Bears. Unreal. They were number 3. They've dropped to number 6 now. Patriots, 3-7 now. They're freaking 3-7. They're not even the worst team in the league. As for the Bears, they have now dropped to 4-5, 3-game losing streak. They are yet to win on the road. It's incredible. It's incredible. And this was just a real eye-opener that I feel like Justin Fields would have thrived here, and Caleb Williams just was not thriving. New England D, 16 fantasy points. Joey Sly, the kicker, 13. Drake May, 11. Keenan Allen at 9. That's your highest fantasy score. DeAndre Swift, 7. Caleb Williams, 6. Just gross. Carlos Santos got a field goal in the second quarter. Other than that, they never even got opportunities. Oh, my gosh. Drake May, 184 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 pick. Against a tough defense, he did pretty good. Ramondre, 20 rushes, only 74 yards. Yeah. Yeah. Not the best offensively wise. I mean, Antonio Gibson, 26 yards. DeMario Douglas, 4 catches, 50 yards. Yeah, nothing was really going for this Patriots team, but even less for the Bears. Caleb Williams, 16 for 30, only 120 yards. Swift only rushed for 59. It was terrible. It was terrible. I mean, I'm actually that mad. I'm more mad I picked this wrong, but I mean, the Bears are 4-5. They have separated themselves from the pack as the worst team in the NFC North. Yeah, they're bad. And by the way, they haven't played an NFC North team just yet. They will meet their first foe in the Packers next week. Then they play the Vikings, then the Lions, then the 49ers, then the Vikings, the Lions, the Seahawks, then the Packers. Bears have a tough, tough schedule, which, I mean, good for them. Good for them. I could honestly care less. As for the Pats, I mean, they're 3-7. They're not going to do anything this year, but you know what? Get some wins. Spoil some other people's chances. Titans and Chargers was another 3-30 matchup. And in terms of the AFC, I mean, this was a great win for the Chargers. Third straight, they're 6-3 in a prime spot to make the playoffs. Did decent here. Herbert, 19.76. Quinton Johnson, 10.4. Chargers D had 10. Calvin Ridley, 25.4, did really good. Will Levis was back in action, 19.1. Pollard at 10.3, kind of an off game for him in the 10.27-17 loss. And I mean, this was looking like it was going to be 27-10 before Calvin Ridley came in, was able to snatch in a touchdown. Will Levis, 175 yards and 2 touchdowns in the return game. Not too shabby. Pollard, 9 rushes, 44 yards. What the heck? Calvin Ridley, 5 catches, 84 yards and 2 touchdowns. Was a stud. Herbert, 164 yards and a touchdown. It's the running game, man. They break it down. Gus Edwards returned, 10 rushes, 55 yards. J.K. Dobbins, 15 for 50. Quentin Johnson caught a touchdown. Good win for the Chargers. It was much more of a defensive game than anything, but hey, 6-3, only giving up 118 points this season. One of the best defenses in the league. Titans, 2-7, 157 points put up, 240 given up. If the Jaguars don't exist, they're the worst team in the AFC South. So, Titans fans, don't get some momentum yet. Let the Vikings eat you alive next week. And we should, guys, right? There's no way the Vikings lose to the Titans. Knocks on wood. Last 3:30 game for you. Actually, we have two more. Eagles blow out the Cowboys 34-6. The only good fantasy player for me in my 16-man league was Jalen Hurts, 29.68. He was beautiful. Jalen Hurts, you were beautiful this week. One of the best performances on Sunday. I love you. Philly D had 20. A.J. Brown, 15.9. Rico Dowdle, 8.6. CeeDee Lamb, 8.4. Dallas D, 8 points. I don't know if I can play with CeeDee Lamb. I think I have to trade CeeDee Lamb away in all of my leagues, you know? Cooper Rush just doesn't know what to do. Cooper Rush looks lost out there, you know? 45 yards passing across an entire football game. Across an entire football game. They put Trey Lance in, 21 yards and a pick. Didn't even know what to do. CeeDee Lamb, 6 catches, 21 yards. He couldn't even get anywhere. But the Philadelphia defense, this was their best game. 202 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 pick. Through the air for Jalen Hurts, 7 rushes, 56 yards, and 2 touchdowns on the ground. Saquon, 14 rushes for 66 yards. Also had 1 catch for 12 yards. A.J. Brown, 5 catches, 109 yards. Devontae Smith, only 2 catches, 14. They put a lot of the backups in. You know, no one really, no starters played the final quarter for the Eagles. Cowboys just suck. Cowboys are actually really bad. And it just doesn't even make sense. The decline from last year is insane. Cowboys 3-6. They've given up 259 points. 0-4 at home. 4-game losing streak. They're awful. Eagles 7-2. Best team in the NFC East. 5-game winning streak. Only given up 161 points this season. Eagles are looking fantastic. And it's not an easy schedule, you know. They play the Commanders on Thursday Night Football, play the Rams next week, play the Ravens. Panthers are a gimme. Steelers game's tough. Commanders, Cowboys a gimme. Eagles might be a gimme. It's tough going ahead. Cowboys, you just need to lock in and get a good draft pick. That's what you got to do. Dak Prescott, one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league, and he's out for the entire year. Abysmal. Jets and Cardinals was our final 3-30 game, and I can't believe it. I honestly can't believe it. Cardinals win 31-6. Jets, what even? I give them the benefit of the doubt this week, and they let me down. Jets are 3-7. AFC East is so terrible. They're the second team in the AFC East. They are absolutely awful. Okay, absolutely abysmal. 1-5 on the road. Lose to the Cardinals, but Cardinals have so much momentum. 4-game win streak, 6-4. Best team in the AFC West. Good for them. Breece Hall, 12.3, the only double-digit score for the Jets. That was it. Kyler Murray, 28.74. Hello. James Conner, 22.3. Hello. Marvin Harrison Jr., 16.4. You love to see it. This game went from bad to worse. It was 24-6 heading into halftime. Turned into 31-6 in the third quarter, and that was that. Aaron Rodgers, 151 yards. That's it. Aaron Rodgers, 151 yards. Garrett Wilson, 5 catches, 41 yards. Devontae, 6 catches, 31 yards. That was it. Truly, that was it. Breece Hall rushed for 52 yards. Just couldn't do anything. Kyler Murray, 266 yards and a touchdown. Rushed for 2 touchdowns. James Carr, 33 yards rushing for a touchdown. Also caught 5 catches for 80 yards. And Marvin Harrison, 5 catches, 54 yards and a touchdown. Trayvon Mullen, 4 catches, 71 yards. He'll get a shout out too. Impressive stuff from the Cardinals. Not much more to say. Didn't watch this one at all. Jets are awful. Jets are absolutely awful. Are they even going to win another game? They play the Colts, play the Seahawks, play the Dolphins, play the Jags, play the Rams, play the Bills, play the Dolphins. They have such winnable games, and man, their offense is just brutal. Aaron Rodgers, you should retire. We wrap things up on Sunday Night Football, and you know, unfortunately I didn't watch this because this was apparently one of the best games of the year. A crazy comeback for the Lions in their worst performance of the year. They performed worse in this game than they did in their one loss. It was insane. Lions win 26-23. They improved to 8-1, 7-game win streak, 5-0 on the road, plus 113 point differential. Incredible. Texans, they fall to 6-4, still lead. The FC South, though, still lead. 4-1 at home, you know, not too bad, minus 2 point differential, but man, this was the Lions all day, all night. Yeah. They were locked in. Amon-Ra, 18 fantasy points. Sam Laporta, 15.6. Jahmyr Gibbs, 12.8. John Mechie, the third. 18 fantasy points for Texans. Joe Mixon, 17. Kai Fairbairn, 12. And I misspoke. Okay, they were not locked in all night. All right, this game started off terrible. This game started off absolutely terrible. It was 23-7 at halftime. Third quarter comes around. Montgomery turns it into a 23-13 game. And then 10 unanswered. Actually, 13 unanswered to win the game. Jake Bates, 52-yard game-winning field goal in Houston. Jared Goff, I kid you not, 240 yards, 2 touchdowns, 5 picks. He threw 4 before his first touchdown. It was incredible. I looked at the stat line, ran downstairs, and two of my buddies were watching. I'm like, guys, did he actually throw 5 picks? Like, yeah. I was like, what? Jahmyr Gibbs, 71 yards rushing. Montgomery punches in the lone touchdown, though. Amon-Ra, 6 catches, 60 yards and a touchdown. Sam Laporta, 3 catches, 66 yards and a touchdown, but gets injured. Houston, C.J. Stroud, 232 yards, touchdown, 2 picks. Joe Mixon, 46 yards rushing and a touchdown. Had 2 catches for 44 yards. Man, Tank Dell, 5 catches, 39 yards. Couldn't get it rolling. Man, Texans blow this game. They have no one to be mad at but themselves. They completely blew it. They completely blew it. It was hilarious to see. I love it. I honestly love it. I'm here for it. I'm here for these upsets when they come and go. I love it. Lions, great win here. Great win. And you know what? They play the Jaguars next week. Winnable game. After that, the Colts. Winnable game. 4 days later, Bears on Thanksgiving. That might be the game they lose. They're not going to get a break there, okay? Then it's Packers, then it's Bills, then it's Bears, then it's 49ers, then it's Vikings. So you kind of get a gimme the next 2 weeks if you're the Lions, then really got locked in for all these divisional games. You know, NFC North, we don't play. We don't play. It's similar, I'd say, to the NFC South, where the only losses you're going to see from some of these teams are from inside the division. So Lions, use these next few weeks, play some lesser teams, get locked in, because Vikings are coming. We're coming for you. Week 18, we're taking the NFC North, and we're going to the Super Bowl. Texans, luckily their division sucks, and I mean, they play the Cowboys next Monday. That they should win that. Titans game, I would assume, you know. Jaguars game, I would assume. Dolphins game, I would assume, but you never know. You honestly never know. I think when they play the Chiefs and Ravens, those are losses, but as I look at the Texans' remaining schedule, with a 6-4 record, I'll give them the Cowboys game. All right, I'll give them the Titans game. All right, that'll move them to 8-4. Jaguars game, I'll give them 9-4. Dolphins game, I'll give them 10-4. Chiefs game, 10-5. Ravens, 10-6. I honestly think the Titans might beat them to end out the year. 10-6 record, 10-7. I got the Texans ending 10-7 to end the year. But that's your Week 10 recap. A lot of stuff went down, and of course, we'll be back next weekend. There's always action going on in the NFL. Same goes for the UFC, and we had a massive event this past weekend. Not really. It was an Apex card, but did not disappoint. We ended with a bang. Okay, Carlos Prates is so legit. We'll go through everything. By the way, 9-2 on predictions this week. 9-2 yearly total. 286 and 107.5. That's right. We are plus 111 on the year. Can you believe it, guys? I can't believe it. Plus 111 on picks. We've been on an absolute roll. We are 29-8 over the last 3 weeks. I mean, come on. Zach's got the locks. I can't wait for UFC 309. But let's give a little recap of UFC Vegas 100. UFC Vegas 100 was littered with finishes, and we kicked things off with a finish. I mean, it was beautiful. It's always nice when you kick the night off with a finish. Unfortunately, we predicted it wrong. One of the two fights we predicted wrong on the whole night, as Melissa Mullins TKO'd Claudia Segula in the second round. This will be Melissa Mullins' fourth career knockout out of her career. 7 wins, and she improves to 2-1. In the UFC. As for Claudia Segula, this is her second career defeat and her first loss in the UFC in her debut. Taylor, this one, I mean, Melissa Mullins' total stats for the fight, 38 significant strikes to 12, 54 total strikes to 22, 2 of 3 on takedowns. Round 1, kind of back and forth. Melissa landed a takedown. Claudia was able to hold her up against the fence. Round 2, Melissa, takedown, gets into top mount, TKO from back of the head. It was a good win. Good win for Melissa Mullins. And in a women's bantamweight division where it is so easy to move up, and you're rarely getting finishes in women's fights, which is why we are definitely going to reward Melissa Mullins in this one. How about the number 14th ranked Chelsea Chandler? All right, perfect fight for Melissa Mullins right there. Look, the woman she just fought, Nora Cronale, they just had her fighting Jermaine Durandamy, for goodness sakes, all right? They had her fighting Aileen Perez, all right? Melissa Mullins, great win, great finish, and hey, out of 7 career wins, 4 knockouts, I'll take you. Claudia Segula, tough loss. There's nothing else to say. I'm sorry, sweetheart. There's nothing I can do with you. Don't know if she's really UFC caliber. You know, she is a bit green at 25 years old. She is from Poland, so if we do go over to Europe in 2025, which I assume we do, we can bring her back for her to take on a regional talent that hasn't quite made it to the UFC. But after this, we were on a roll from here. Trayshawn Gore, Antonio Tricoli. We nailed this one. Round 1 submission from Trayshawn Gore. And I just knew it. I just knew it. You know, I knew that Trayshawn Gore, he was coming in. He was coming into this one hungry, rested, no ring rust in this one. Antonio Tricoli, he has a very standstill type of stance. And, you know, Trayshawn Gore went right over, took his neck, got him on, and he cranks your neck. Standing guillotine, he loves to crank that neck. And Trayshawn Gore, great win here. 2-fight win streak, both of them guillotines, by the way. 6-2 record, and with that, his third career submission, so 4 of 6 career wins by finish. We'll take that. 2-2 now in the UFC. Hasn't lost since 2022. Good stuff. Good stuff, Trayshawn Gore, all around. Antonio Tricoli, he is now 0-2 in the UFC. Also lost on Dana White's Contender Series. I don't know what to do with him. Tricoli, We might have to cut you. I think we're going to cut you, you know, middleweight division. Plenty of killers, plenty of killers. And hey, you know what? Actually, there's one option I'll give you. We're going to mention Dusko Todorovic later. Dusko and Antonio Tricoli, if they really want to keep both of those guys, they can fight to see who remains in the UFC. I'll give them that. I will give them, that'll be the benefit of the doubt for those two. But other than that, I'm done with him. Antonio Tricoli just does not look UFC caliber, but Treshawn Gore does. Treshawn Gore does. Great middleweight win here. I don't know what to do with him, though. I'm going to be honest, I actually have someone in mind for Treshawn, but you know, he is 6-2, he's a bit of a green, I like to use the word green, honestly, to describe him. 30 years old, you know, there's a lot of options at middleweight, but I always like to matchmake on the same card, so we'll try and think of some options when we move up into the other fights on the card. Following that, first performance bonus of the night, as Damon Blackshear runs through Cody Stammen. This was satisfying to watch. Big fan of Damon Blackshear. You know, even though I predicted that Montel Jackson would knock him out in his last fight, I knew he would get through to Cody Stammen in this one. I had it in round two, but he didn't want to wait. Damon Blackshear gets his 10th career submission, his 12th career finish, and 15 career wins. Snapping a little two-fight losing streak. Great win. And I mean, as we look at his run so far in the UFC, draw against Yusuf Zalal, decision loss to Fareed Basharat, lost to Mauro Batista, lost to Montel Jackson, it really tells that he only is losing to top-level guys. In this one, Damon Blackshear, you know, they were going back and forth on the feet here and there, and then Damon just started going for the submission attempts. 3 attempts in 4 minutes and 19 seconds, which is how long this fight lasted. Wound up on the ground, got a rear naked choke in, and that was that. Great win for Damon Blackshear. Cody Stammen, 3-fight losing streak now, 2-6 in his last 8. Yeah, Cody Stammen probably on his way out of the UFC. I hate to say it. I do have one more option for him, as I love to matchmake on the same card. But I mean, it's tough. Tough stuff here. Damon Blackshear, I don't know if I want to give him a ranked opponent, you know, being that he did lose to the number 15 guy. But, you know, there's a guy, Dominic Cruz, who was just booted from the rankings for inactivity. I think Damon Blackshear and Dominic Cruz would be a banger fight. Honestly, I think that would be an amazing fight if Dominic Cruz is still willing to come back. You know, he could just remain retired. But hey, I'll rock with that. Damon Blackshear, great win, and we predicted it. After that, I mean, come on. Come on. We just know ball. Charles Radke, Matthew Selmelsberger, round one knockout. We called it. We called it. Radke, literally just, and I didn't think he'd do it this easily, you know, but 51 seconds. Radke runs through Selmelsberger. I mean, holy cow. It's like he landed 7 punches this entire fight. Every punch that landed on Selmelsberger looked like he rocked him. I think Selmelsberger's chin is completely gone. I honestly think it's completely gone. Radke gets his 5th career knockout. Selmelsberger gets knocked out for the 3rd time in his career. Just goodness me. And it was like every punch just rocked. And now he freaking just takes care of business. Did what he needed to do. Radke moves to 3-1 in the UFC, his 2nd round one knockout of 2024. Only loss in the UFC, Carlos Prates. Talk about a win that has aged tremendously, being that he's made it 4 minutes and 47 seconds with him. It ain't easy to go any longer of a fight with Carlos Prates, but great win for Charles Radke. Selmelsberger, 4-fight losing streak, 1-5 in his last 6. 2nd time he's been finished in his last 3. Yeah, Selmelsberger gonna get cut. I'm sorry. It's time to go. Goodbye. Nothing to do with you. Yeah, there you go. There really isn't a place for you here. I'm sorry, Matthew Selmelsberger. He was once red hot, but you know, he's 11-8, hasn't won since 2022. Ugh, just not the best. Radke, though, great win. I loved it. You know who you should fight next? The man we're going to talk about next, Eliseo Zaleski dos Santos, who ran through Zachary Scrogan. So, Eliseo Zaleski dos Santos, Charles Radke, I think that fight just writes itself. Or you do Nicholas Dalby for either of these guys. Nicholas Dalby was supposed to fight Eliseo Zaleski dos Santos. Instead, steps in Zachary Scrogan, 28 years old, super young. He just wasn't ready. Similar to Matthew Selmelsberger, every punch that hit this kid, he just went down. 11 significant strikes to 3. The same type of fight, back-to-back. Every fight, every punch that these guys landed just hurt him. And Scrogan, this will be his first career loss, be it it's to Eliseo Zaleski dos Santos. That's a good loss. I had this going the distance. Zaleski dos Santos, he didn't want to wait the distance. First win since June of last year. Great win. This will be Eliseo Zaleski dos Santos' 15th career knockout. Very impressive. Improves to 25-8. You know what? Radke, Dalby, and Dos Santos. I think there's a little triangle there of fights we can make. But, I mean, you could do Zachary Scrogan versus Matthew Semelsberger. I doubt that. I don't think either of those guys are coming back to the UFC. Scrogan just looked very new. And, you know, it's tough to see. It's tough to see. But Eliseo Zaleski Dos Santos, I was very satisfied. And I kept the picks rolling. Truly, I kept the picks rolling. It was so satisfying. I was loving every minute of it. After that, women's strawweight action as Denise Gomez beats Carolina Kowalski by unanimous decision. She's obviously not ranked, oddly. I'd rank Denise Gomez at number 15, but that's just me. You know, her only losses to Angela Hill, who's ranked number 12. Two-fight win streak now, 2-0 in 2024 for Denise Gomez. Good win. Good win here. She had some moments in round one where she could have gotten the finish. You know, it was 22-7 significantly in round one. Had some control time on the ground. Round two, much closer. Denise Gomez, 23-13. Round three, the closest round of the fight. Maybe the only round Carolina could have won. 28 significant strikes to 26, but Denise Gomez just had her number. Kept ending up on the back somehow. 5 minutes, 47 seconds control time for Denise Gomez. Carolina, sucks to see. It really does. She's a legend of the game. Two-fight losing streak, though. Probably time for her to start looking towards retirement, if you will. But, hey, I would not rule her out. You know, there's tons of great women strawweights out there for her to fight. Unfortunately, I just think her UFC run is coming to an end. You know, she's pushing 40. She'll be 40 before she knows it. And I think she's going to be fed to an up-and-comer. But Denise Gomez, look. Tisha Pennington at 15. Luiana Pinheiro, who's probably going to be ranked number 14. I think there's options for Denise Gomez to get her into the UFC ranking. She improves to 10-3. Great win. Carolina sadly falls to 16-9. After that, my favorite debut of the year. All right, this one, honestly not my favorite, but one of my favorites of the year. Mansoor Abdul-Malik, my favorite fighter to come out of the current season of Dana White's Contender Series. Okay, talk about a guy. You know, this was a recurring theme on this card. Where there's just some fighters where you're just landing on them and they're just getting rattled. And Mansoor Abdul-Malik just had it going. 2 minute, 44 second knockout of Dusko Todorovic earns him the performance bonus. He improves to 7-0, six knockouts, five of them coming in round number one. So impressive. So impressed with Mansoor in this one, truly. Truly, I was very impressed. Actually, all seven of his wins by knockout. Six in round one. My goodness, I had one fight off. Mansoor, you're an absolute killer. Absolute killer. Just ran through Dusko. Dusko now, two-fight losing streak. Dusko's getting cut. Okay, Dusko's getting cut, or they're having Dusko fight Antonio Tricoli. That's what I got there, but Mansoor. Oh my goodness, vicious, just vicious. I mean, he was caught in a leg lock for a bit of a time. It wasn't actually ever locked in, but I mean, kept landing. 29 significant strikes to 3, 31 total strikes to 3, through 54. I mean, he was just laying it on Dusko. Every time he landed, it was hurting him. And Mansoor, great debut, 50K performance bonus. Middleweight, you got a killer. You got a killer here, middleweight. And, you know, Trayshawn Gore won, all right. Mansoor won. You could match them up, but I honestly would love to match either of them up with Gerald Meerschaert, personally. But I mean, Mansoor, great debut. We nailed the round one knockout prediction, and we were on fire. After that, Jillian Robertson, Luiana Pinheiro, I mean, she didn't get the finish. Okay, Jillian Robertson ranked 14, beats number 13th ranked Luiana Pinheiro. She'll be ranked 13th come tomorrow morning. She did get the finish, but just so many attempts. So many attempts. 5 of 17 on takedowns for Jillian. 8 minutes, 13 seconds control time. She had her number. She truly did. Round 1, Jillian, 15-14. Very close. She landed 3 takedowns. I think Jillian took round 1. Round 2, Luiana bounced back. 25 significant strikes to 20. Defended 5 takedowns. Looked good. Round 3, taken down once. 4 minutes, 18 seconds control time. Gets 10-8 on every judge's scorecard except one. Yeah, Jillian Robinson, great win. 3-fight win streak. 3-0 in 2024. Last loss was to the number 10 ranked woman strawweight. Incredible stuff from Jillian Robinson. Truly a career turnaround for her. And imagine coming into your prime. Imagine coming into your prime when you're 39 years old. That's what Jillian Robinson is doing right now. Seasoned, veteran, I've loved it, dominant. Her opponent, Luiana Pinheiro, you know, this is unfortunate. Luiana Pinheiro at one point was on a bit of a run, you know, had a verge of the rankings. Now she's dropped her last three. You know, like I mentioned, Denise Gomez, someone outside of the rankings, I think is who should be next for her. But yeah, Jillian, great win. Luiana, 3-fight losing streak, very tough. Yeah, Yeah, yeah. Let's matchmake here. Jillian, she's going to be ranked number 13. Liliana, 14. I think Liliana Pinheiro versus DC Gomez. That's the fight you make. As for Jillian, you know, her last loss, you know, was to Tabitha Ritchie. Number 11, Lupi Godinez. She's coming off a loss. I like the number 11, Lupi Godinez. I like Marina Rodriguez at 9. Amanda Ribas at 8. There's a lot of options. Someone above here. Great stuff from all these women. Jillian Robertson, keeping us a moving. After that, we got into the second fight we incorrectly predicted as Gaston Bolanos beats Cortavious Ramos by unanimous decision. I actually didn't think he did until I saw the final stats, but good win for Bolanos. Needed this one. He you know, good win. 30-27, 30-27, 30-26. Totals from the fight, 53 significant strikes at 17, 80 total strikes at 30, both in favor of Gaston. 2 of 2 on takedowns, 4.5 minutes of control time for Gaston. 4 of 6 on takedowns for Cortavious, 6 minutes, 13 seconds. I had round 1 going to Cortavious. I guess I shouldn't have. I had round 2 going to Cortavious. I guess I shouldn't have. I had round 3 going to Cortavious. I guess I watched a different fight. Maybe I was biased because I picked him. But I honestly felt that Gaston wasn't doing the most damage on the feet. The only reason Cortavious was bleeding was because of the headbutt. And other than that, I thought his grappling looked good, but I guess not. The Topiro lookalike, Gaston, improves to 8-4 and gets his second UFC win. 2-1 now, good stuff. Gaston will remain in the UFC. As for Cortavious, you know, tough loss here, but he'll bounce back. They'll give him another opportunity at bantamweight. How about Cody Stamann for Gaston Bolanos? That's an easy match to make there. Cortavious, I say he takes on another up-and-comer. Maybe even Cortavious versus Raul Rosas Jr. That would be a fun fight. I can get behind that. Cortavious Ramos versus Raul Rosas Jr. Or you could even do Gaston versus Raul Rosas Jr. A lot of options there. Mid fight. Probably the worst fight of the evening. But after that, bangers. Two bangers. The co-main event. Rainer Day Ritter, the former one championship double champion, middleweight and light heavyweight, coming down here to middleweight, you know, and proving himself. Proving himself. Gerald did not make it easy. Gerald Meerschaert did not make this one easy. And Rainer Day Ritter powers through and proves the 18-2 with a round 3 submission, getting his 13th career submission, 16 of his 18 wins by finish, 2-fight win streak now. Great win for Rainer. Round 1, 2 of 6 on takedowns for Rainer, but Gerald was honestly getting the better of the exchanges. Then with 5 seconds left, drops Gerald, just about damn near knocks him out with a second left. The fight, ref jumps in, stops it. Gerald gets back to his feet, comes back, ready to go, wins round 2. You know, 2 of 6 on takedowns for Rainer, but 2 minutes, 25 seconds for Gerald. Outstruck him 9-5 significantly. Good stuff. Round 3 comes around. Rainer wastes no time. Takes Gerald down. Great takedown defense. Gets to an arm triangle from mount, and that was that. And these two were gassed to the gills. Holy cow. Rainer Day Ritter, Gerald Meerschaert gave it their all. And I mean, you'd have thought these guys went 5 hard rounds the way they were gassed after it was all said and done. But Rainer Day Ritter, happy for him. Welcome to the UFC. Plenty of options at middleweight. I don't know if we want to throw him directly at the rankings, I'll be honest, but if we do, honestly, if we do want to throw him at the rankings, you know, I think Michelle Pereira could be a fun fight. I think Jack Hermanson, if you want to throw him in the rankings, there's a lot of options there. Chris Curtis, Roman Kopilov, the winner of that. If we want to test him with a grappler, Anthony Hernandez, he's probably fighting upwards, but great win for Rainer. Gerald Meerschaert, the ultimate gatekeeper in the UFC, is insane. You know, that was his 13th career finish of 18 losses. So out of his 18 losses, he's been finished 13 times. Snapping a 2-fight losing streak, but Gerald Meerschaert lived by the sword, died by the sword. Since 2020, he's only ever gone the distance twice. Dude truly is just ride or die. I absolutely love that about him. Rainer, excited to see what he brings in the UFC. You know, he's no spring chicken. He's 34, but there's still time. There's still time for him. I think we need to slowly work him in. I mean, I'm thinking Abus Magomedov could be another great matchup for him. Nursultan Ruzaboyev, if he fights at middleweight. We'll see what happens. But Rainer Day Ritter, welcome to the UFC. Great debut. Great win over Gerald Meerschaert. And by the way, we nailed the submission for Rainer Day Ritter in round number 3. How about that? And then, the main event. This one, my favorite prediction that I nailed. On the evening, Carlos Prates, Neil Magny. Holy cow. Holy cow. What I saw from Carlos Prates in this one was insane. Just utterly insane. Carlos Prates, he improves to 21-6, okay? Out of those 21 wins, 16 knockouts, 3 submissions. He gets one here. All right, his best knockout of his UFC run so far. And he's rookie of the year. He is the what do you want to call it? Incoming fighter, debut fighter of the year. I mean, 4-0, all knockouts, all performance bonuses. Only one went to round two. Oh my gosh, he's insane. He is truly insane. Carlos Prates is a generational talent here, and the fighting nerds are taking over. He's going to be ranked number 15th. I'd even rank him number 14 or 13 come Monday. Holy cow, come Tuesday, I should better say. But yeah, Carlos Prates defended 7 takedowns from Neil Magny. He was up against the cage. He kept trying to land ones. Eventually, Neil Magny even got tripped, and Carlos Prates took him down. Prates gets back up, and with 10 seconds left, barely even clips him. You don't understand the power of how much power Carlos Prates has. Barely clips him with a hook across the top of his head. Neil Magny is face planted. You think the Santiago Ponzinibbio knockout of Neil Magny is good? Go watch this one of the Carlos Prates fight. Oh my goodness. Carlos Prates, Kyle Barallo, Gene Silva, Mauricio Ruffi, they're coming to take over the Fighting Nerds, one of the best upcoming gyms in MMA. Carlos Prates, amazing. I loved it. I loved every single ounce of it. And Neil Magny, you know, now of his 13 career losses, finished 10 times. That's absolutely crazy. And, you know, Neil Magny, you got to be good to beat him. You really do. And clearly, Carlos Prates is just that good. I love this. Truly. Truly, I love this. Great win for Carlos. The sky is looking upwards. I mean, he called out Jeff Neal. Make it. Make that fight. He also called out Jack Della Maddalena. I think even he realized, he was like, that'd be a great fight, but I'm not getting that fight. So he called out Jeff Neal. That's the fight to make. Jeff Neal, Carlos Prates, throw it as the co-main, throw it as a main event, do whatever you want with it, make that fight, okay? I mean, MVP, he's not going to MVP. Luque, barely making it 2 minutes with him, okay? Jeff Neal is a true striking challenge for Carlos Prates. I'm here for that. Neil Magny, he's going to be taking on an unranked man coming up next. I don't know who. There's plenty of comers. Oh gosh, there's plenty of people on the come up in the UFC. I'm not saying comers again. That sounds absolutely terrible. I mean, looking through the past few weekends, Mac Mallett back in the win column, but he beat him. Gosh, I don't know. Welterweight division is just littered with talent. It's really tricky to think of an exact person. Has anyone fought Jeff Neal, Rafael dos Anjos, Renat Fakhretdinov? Boom, Renat Fakhretdinov, Neil Magny. Let's make that fight. Bingo, boingo, I picked it out. Neil Magny, Renat Fakhretdinov, perfect fight right there. Carlos, he'll be fighting in the top 10. He'll be a champion before we know it. This dude is so talented. Honestly, sky's the limit. I'm picking Carlos Prates over, I pick him over Ian Garry. Colby Covington, I think he can beat. Jack Del Malina will be tough, but you know, looking at Jack Del Malina versus Kevin Holland, that should tell you a lot of stuff. Sean Brady fight, I mean, I think you're looking at Shavkat Usman, Leon Bilal. That's the limit now for Prates. And I'm picking Prates over those guys. Truly, Carlos Prates, future champion. I love him. And hell, he's going to be the debut fighter of the year. And he wasn't even on my radar. How about that? Ladies and gentlemen, that'll do it for this week's episode. I mean, our Monday episode, Tuesday episode, whenever I drop this one. But the UFC Vegas 100 pleasantly surprised me. I was happy with it. Went just about damn near perfect on predictions. And 8 of 11 fights by finish. I love that. Great times, election results, NFL results, pop culture results. We talk about all sorts of things here on the podcast. I regret to inform everyone that I unfortunately did not get into my class. I talked with the dean and I was unable to get into my final class I need to graduate, which means I'll have to take it in the summer and pay extra. Minnesota State Mankato draining me financially. I can't wait till I write a big FU check to them in the future and I destroy the management department. I'm just kidding. Don't sue me. I'm joking, but I'm rich and famous. I may be a bit more lenient when I decide to donate here. All right. That's all I got for you this week, folks. I'll stop rambling about whatever. But hey, stay tuned. We got multiple episodes coming out this week and next week. Special guests are on their way. I was about to say coming. I'm done using that word. I'll see you all next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.